This past weekend, there was a Peace and Justice Conference held at Tufts University. It was called New Strategies for the Obama Era, Are You Ready? There were workshops and organizing on a variety of issues, including climate change, foreclosures, immigrant and human rights, Iraq and Palestine. Angela Kelly of Mass Peace Action was one of the organizers of the event. She is working on legislation at the Massachusetts State House calling for Massachusetts to take control of its National Guard and bringing those troops back home. I asked, even if the legislation were to pass, would it supersede federal authority?
Yeah, I mean, I think if anything, we hope that this will continue to stimulate the conversation with decision makers and to make clear to our state leaders the opposition to the war that remains and the really human impact it continues to have every day for these military families and soldiers and veterans that, you know, we might not be hearing about the war in the news much anymore, but for them, it continues as the top priority in their lives every day. But it's very easy for our state decision makers to forget about that or to forget that there is organized opposition right here amongst their constituents that want to see them take leadership in whatever spheres of influence they have, whether it's Governor Patrick bringing his influence with President Obama or our state legislature putting pressure on our members of Congress, calling for more proactive policies to bring all the troops home and make sure they're taken care of when they get here.
Angela Kelly of Mass Peace Action at Saturday's Peace Conference at Tufts University. She went on to explain the economic consequences as well.
As we continue to keep our National Guard troops there, as we continue to perpetuate these costly wars, the resources that it's draining from our state and Massachusetts, and we know the budget crunch we're in right now, we know how many programs have had to be cut, and that this, you know, helps us to move along the argument that ending the wars and occupations would help us invest in security here at home and meet all of the unmet needs right here in Massachusetts, which is certainly in the interest of the governor and the state legislature.
Indeed it is. So this piece of legislation is an organizing tool, more or less, for you guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And this conference is also an organizing tool, and you're taking advantage of both.
Absolutely, we are. It's been a great conference. There's a lot of energy, so many people here from all different groups, and I think the best part is that it's really trying to bring many pressing issues together. So, you know, we're working on this campaign on the National Guard. We're working on campaigns on Afghanistan, on nuclear weapons. But what's most critical is that we find the points of intersection where these issues come together and where they're also related to the economic crisis before us and the environmental crisis we're facing as well, so that we can build a more collaborative, more powerful movement going forward.
Governor Patrick is a close friend of President Obama. So the hope is to pressure the governor to use his influence with the president into speeding up the timetable. Apparently, the Iraqi people would like us to speed up that timetable as well. Raad Jarrah is an Iraqi architect who was living there during the time of the invasion. He addressed the midday plenary session.
During the Obama campaign, I was really critical of Obama's plan to deal with the Iraq war and occupation because of one major reason. Obama at that time never promised to get all the troops out of Iraq. He always talked about withdrawing what he called combat forces from Iraq. Now, Iraqis don't really care about what label the U.S. government puts over the occupation. You know, it's not like the next morning they will start calling it the non-combat occupation or anything. And they don't care about troop level. You know, people care about their country being occupied or sovereign. That's why, from an Iraqi point of view, the U.S. withdrawal will not cause the sky to fall. The U.S. withdrawal will help Iraqis create the right environment for political and economic reconciliation. So I want to assure you that I don't know a lot of Iraqis who are, you know, freaking out because of a lack of an occupation. You know, seriously, people are not worried. Like, they're not going around the streets saying, what are we going to do with our country if we were independent and free? You know, how are we going to run our business? No, this is not what's happening. People are worried about the continuation of the occupation that did cause the sky to fall every single day. We're talking about a foreign, brutal occupation that has caused the death of more than a million Iraqis in the last 6 years and the displacement of another 5 million. These are huge numbers. Do we really believe that if we did have this, we'll be asking our foreign occupiers to stay a little bit longer? No, I don't think so, right? And the Iraqis wouldn't be doing that because not only because they are, you know, humans and they hate occupation. The best way to help Iraqis is not to help them reconstruct their buildings. There are so many architects who can do that. It's not to help them how to create a self-government system. They know how to do that by themselves. They don't expect us to do these things for them. The most important first step that we should focus on as U.S. taxpayers and residents is to get out of their way. This is what they want us to do. It's the biggest gift that we can give to Iraqis or Afghanis or Iranians. Get out of their way. Thank you very much.
Linguistics professor emeritus at MIT and world-renowned social critic Noam Chomsky spoke at the kickoff plenary session Friday evening. He analyzed President Obama's planned troop deployment for Afghanistan.
We don't know the numbers. The Washington Post, one of the few comments on it, their corresponding Pamela Constable said that one of the big problems the U.S. forces, the new forces, are going to face when they get to Afghanistan. Of course, one of the problems will be insurgency. The other problem will be they're not wanted. They'll have to somehow deal with this. It's a rather tricky issue. Karzai is not super popular. His popularity runs about 50% according to Western polls, but that's almost twice as high as the popularity of the Western forces, the American forces there. So that's another technical difficulty that has to be dealt with somehow. That's what we can anticipate. As you probably know, there's major demonstrations next week in Strasbourg protesting NATO's expansion, and in fact NATO's existence, and one task for the future, for us, not far future now, is to try to do something about this. It's all starting here. They shouldn't be in Afghanistan, and there's no reason why they should be anywhere. That's a little bit of one piece of the story, AFPAC.
Noam Chomsky speaking last Friday evening at the Social Justice Conference held at Tufts University. He also addressed Hamas and some recent comments made by Senator John Kerry.
So we can't deal with them. And of course, as always, there's a pretext. The pretext is that Hamas doesn't accept three conditions that we impose. One, they have to recognize Israel. Two, they have to renounce violence. And three, they have to accept previous agreements, particularly the famous roadmap. The fact that he can say that, anybody can say that, without the press corps collapsing in ridicule, is pretty impressive. Does the U.S. accept those three conditions? Does Israel accept? Have the U.S. and Israel renounced violence? Do they recognize Palestine? Do they live up to past agreements, like, say, the roadmap? No. In fact, Israel immediately announced, when the roadmap appeared, that it wasn't going to accept it. The way they did it is by saying, yeah, we accept it, it's wonderful, we add 14 reservations, which completely eviscerate it. Actually, one of the merits of Jimmy Carter's book is that for the first time he broke the silence on that. You notice that no reviewer ever mentioned it, but that was the one novel contribution within the mainstream in his book. He actually had an appendix in which he gave the 14 reservations, which the U.S. approved of, which ends that agreement.
MIT professor Noam Chomsky. Phyllis Bennis is a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. She spoke at the Saturday midday plenary session.
What has changed now is that we have the possibility of a government that might move towards some kind of real multilateralism. We haven't seen it yet. I'm open. I'm still optimistic. I'm thinking we can still bring enough pressure to bear on this administration that things are going to be really different. But we can't assume it. This administration, the first African-American-led administration in the history of this country, has announced they're not going to go to Geneva for the review conference of the World Conference Against Racism next month. Now, how outrageous is that? For the first time, we not only have things to learn from the rest of the world about the struggle against racism, we might even have a little bit we could teach somebody, because we did something good. We did something good. We overcame one more piece of that multiplicity of legacies of racism in this country. And we thought that, unlike the Bush administration that walked out of the Durban Conference in 2001, we thought that this administration would embrace that process and say, oh yeah, this is our role. When we talk about U.S. leadership, it means leadership in the struggle against racism. That's where we start. So I urge you all to urge that level of participation. if we're talking about Israel-Palestine, we don't have to say, we stand with the heroic people of Palestine against the terrible Israeli occupiers. We stand with international law. We stand with justice. That's the basis of the peace movement. It isn't a question of, is justice first or is peace first? Without one, you don't get the other. No justice, no peace. No peace, no justice. That's not rocket science. We've got a rocket science equivalent in the White House for the first time in a really long time, and that's fabulous. We need to use that. We need to use that and say the basis of the struggle for peace is justice. Whether it's around poverty, around racism, around ending wars, they're all connected. And our job, and it's a big one, is to fight for all of them. Thank you.
Phyllis Bennis at the Saturday Midday Plenary Session. American Friends Service Committee author Joseph Gerson wrote several books on nuclear proliferation from Hiroshima to the present. He conducted a workshop called Obama and the Bomb, 21st Century Nuclear Weapons Dangers and the Promise of Abolition.
Well, I think we may make some progress, but it's only going to be if people push. Because we've got the Nuclear Nonproliferation Review Conference coming up in 2010. The Bush administration subverted it in 2005. If that conference fails, we're going to see the absolute global proliferation of nuclear weapons and the catastrophic wars that will follow. It's really imperative that we get Obama to follow through on the commitments he made during the primaries and during the campaign to take a number of major steps toward disarmament and to move for the United States to finally implement its part of the nonproliferation treaty to negotiate their elimination. Even the New York Times is going for it. But the question is how we mobilize people behind that so it's not just words, but we get real change out of it.
Melissa Kirsch is a local activist with Cambridge Somerville for Change.
Our priorities might be a little bit different than his in terms of the peace and justice movement and really trying to have a conversation about that. I personally felt like that I supported him in the campaign. I'm glad that he's in office. And I think this conference is a way to sort of come together, network with some people, and figure out ways to push back on issues that remain still important.
I'm Smriti Rao, and I think people are kind of recovering from the whole Obama election, and they're trying to figure out now what next and how does one respond to his agenda. And so I think this is an opportunity for that kind of thinking to happen in a more sort of public fashion.
President Obama campaigned on a promise of hope and change. The energy and persistence at this conference was to push for that hope and change in a progressive manner. The new strategies for the Obama-era conference took place March 27th or 29th on the campus of Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts. Roger Leisner of Radio Free Maine provided some of the recorded material for this report. For the Boston Community Reporters Project, I am Chuck Rosina in Medford, Massachusetts.